The FFC and all staff present. This meeting is officially opened. Honourable members, the FFC did some weeks ago table before myself and Honourable Tipe. We met with Mr. Kumalo from the FFC, where he was taking us through the work on the review of local government fiscal framework, and we then concluded that it will be much more important if presentation is done to the committee, and we extend our invitations to provinces, as we felt that the work that they have done requires the attention of everybody, as it will take us forward in engaging with both the National Treasury and all relevant stakeholders and municipalities insofar as the fiscal of that level of government is concerned. So we then convened this meeting, and we are here today to get that particular presentation from the FFC. And we have indeed invited the minister. Unfortunately, he could not be with us today. We have invited provinces and also some committees of parliament, like the Select Committee on Cooperative Governance, led by Honorable Mr. Mohobi, as well as an invitation was also extended to our colleagues in the National Assembly, Honorable Sokoni. So I am hopeful that they will be joining us later today, as they do have got their committee engagements. I do have a number of apologies. It's an apology from Minister Baloyi, who will not be available, but he has sent Mr. Sikiti, the Deputy Director General for Governance, Intergovernmental Relations, on his behalf, and I hope he's here. Yes, he is here. Then you are welcome, sir. And then we have also received an apology from MEC Clifford Motsepe from Limpopo, who is unable to attend due to other commitments. We also have an apology from MEC from the Western Cape. Also, he has got a flashing engagement. We have received also an apology from Honorable Bloom, who might join us later because he's attending to COCTA meeting. The other apology is from Honorable Mashile, who's of sick. Honorable Dibier is being deployed in Concordia as there are by-elections there, so we'll only be joining back in Parliament tomorrow. And Honorable Muntinzi is attending the JSC meeting this morning at 10, so you can't. And the last one comes from Honorable Makubela, who will be joining us later, as he is going to start at the Land and Environmental Affairs meeting, where he will be tabling the mandate of his province. So those are the apologies, honorable members, that I have received from these members, and I am sure that we would not have a problem with them. Then without any waste of time, because we only have until 1 o'clock. I will then hand over to Mr. Khumalo, the acting chair of the FFC, to then table their presentation. Mr. Khumalo.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, honourable members, and colleagues that are present here today. Let me first of all start by putting the context for this report. I think this report basically is done in terms of Section 3 of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act. The reason why the Commission decided to embark on this exercise was because the period between 2008-2009 through 2010 was characterized by quite a lot of discussions and debates around the local government finances, in particular the local government equitable share and the adequacy of the revenue that goes to municipalities through the revenue sharing mechanism or the division of revenue process, as it were. There were also a number of discussions that related to the functional assignments for different categories of municipalities that was also being discussed at that particular point in time. Now, in response to some of those discussions, the Commission found itself in a situation where it had made quite a number of recommendations in the period prior to 2008 that related to local government, including recommendations around the local government equitable share formula and other matters relating to local government transfers. In discussions at the Commission, we then decided that maybe because, you see, every time you get a new government coming into power after 5 years, a lot of things can actually fall through the cracks. And so we decided to relook at what we had done, some of which provided or could provide some answers to some of the issues that were being raised. Now, under normal circumstances, when we make these recommendations, we make them through our submission on the annual division of revenue. In that annual submission on the division of revenue were quite a number of recommendations that related to some of the issues that were being discussed, and we were getting a lot of messages coming from Parliament and other forums that pointed certain fingers or, for lack of a better word, basically certain issues that the Commission must actually pay attention to. And so we then began a process of consolidating all of those recommendations passed and then looked at the responses that had been given to the Commission in the as an annexure to the Division of Revenue Bill, where the Minister responds to the recommendations of the Commission. And we found that quite a number of those recommendations had been actually received in the positive by government, but in terms of the implementation, they were probably being implemented at different paces. And then we decided to then embark on an exercise where we called all what we considered to be the relevant stakeholders, including the various committees in Parliament, cooperative governance, which I must actually thank the then chairperson of that committee, Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance, Minister Tsinodi, who actually drove the process with us. So we started a process of public hearings. The first was held in Limpopo, hosted by the MEC for Finance in Limpopo, MEC Masondo, and attended by a number of people, some of whom are actually here with us today. I can say Dr. Sigidi there was one of the people that met the initial inputs from the department's point of view of what the issues were that the department was dealing with. Now, we've also had a number of people from the Treasury, from municipalities, from SALGA, making initial inputs around these issues. And we then crafted what we called a problem statement, which we then circulated around all the stakeholders for them to confirm whether we have actually picked on the key issues that the stakeholders considered to be the challenges that needed to be addressed. And then we then started a process where we conducted technical research around those issues that had been identified. And then in 2012, we held a second set of public hearings, basically reporting back on the technical solutions that, from a technical point of view, we thought these were the solutions. We took feedback, again, from stakeholders, and then we finalized the report, which we tabled about, I think it's 2 weeks ago, in Parliament. I think what is important about this report is that when we started working on it, we were very much aware that there was a broader review that was being led by the National Treasury and the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, which was looking at the local government fiscal, functional and fiscal framework. So it's a broader review which also deals with the assignment of functions, and then obviously you come back to the fiscal framework, of which we were also invited to be part. We did indicate at that point that we will actually adopt an independent view. We will participate in the process, but we also have our own mandate in terms of the FFC Act, as I indicated in my first slide around this. But our mandate basically is on the fiscal framework. So what the functional framework is, we take as given. We can respond if we are requested to make certain recommendations around that. We can actually respond, but we take it as given, and then we look at what is the most appropriate fiscal framework that should accompany this functional framework. So this report basically does not address the issues of the assignment of functions to different categories of municipalities, but takes those as actually given. And so with those few words, I would ask Chairperson that Mr. Jugal, I didn't introduce my team, by the way. Let me do that, if you allow, first, and then I will ask Jugal to take us through, Jugal and Dr. Nube to take us through the presentation. I am accompanied by Commissioner Tanya Ajam, who is sitting next to me on my right. And then I've got Dr. Mkululi Ncube on my left, who is the head of our local government program in the commission, and Mr. Jugal Mahabie, who is a senior researcher in the local government unit of the commission. So with that, Chairperson, I would like to hand over to Mr. Mahabie to take us through the content of the report together with Dr. Ncube, and then I will in the end request that Ms. Ajam also comes in and makes a few remarks to close the process.
Thank you, Mr. Kumalo. Honorable members, colleagues, as pointed out, the aim of this process was to try and get a consensus or a collaborative effort in identifying the key areas or key issues that need to be analyzed in the review of the local government fiscal framework. So as pointed out, this was done through two public hearings where, as you can see in this slide, eight areas of concern were raised. In forming a problem statement of the local government fiscal framework review, while solutions or options to solve some of these problems are also discussed. So I will take the committee and the meeting through the first four, while Dr. Ngube will take the meeting through the remaining four. So this slide shows, like I said, the eight areas of contention. One of the first areas or first problem areas raised was the issue of differentiation. Now, we know this area has always been mooted in several forums, and that a fiscal framework or a funding system needs to be very sensitive to the differences that each and every municipality finds itself in the country. So this slide just reiterates this context. And I just want to point out that you can see the various types of municipalities on this side as well. And the first four to five columns actually shows the stark differences that some of these municipalities actually find themselves in. So if you look at your metropolitan municipalities with much larger population, much more households relative to the other ones. But if you look at the economic and demographic profile of them, they also differ quite starkly. So if you look at the metropolitan GVA or the economic activity per capita, it's 75 rand per person per month, while that's the rural municipality is 9.4, which is almost eight times that of a rural municipality. The same goes for the number of employed people and poor households, where you can see with the rural municipalities, around 80% of the households are earning less than 3,200 per month. Now, the point of all of this is that it ultimately impacts on the fiscal framework and the expenditure ability and the revenue ability of these various municipalities, which is given in your last two columns, whereby a metropolitan municipality on average was spending 3,700 rand per capita, while a rural municipality was spending 370 rand. And then likewise on the revenue, where a metro was, from its own revenue or from local taxes, was collecting 3,200 rand on the side, while a rural municipality 120 rand. Now, the context of this, the fiscal framework needs to be sensitive, whereby the grant funding needs not only to be sensitive to this economic and social context, but also embedded in these numbers is performance issues, whereby the service delivery could be suffering and also poor collection of taxes. So this is from our engagements and analysis, is a context of differentiation that we feel that the local government fiscal framework needs to adopt in order to improve the funding of municipalities. It actually builds from a lot of work that COPTA has been doing. But the essence of this graph is that when funding or the local government fiscal framework needs to be very sensitive to context issues, like those social, economic circumstances that were pointed out in the previous slide, while also issues on performance. So, and then the funding system needs to be built around that context. So, for example, if you look at the bottom dot, show it on this side. That is a rural municipality that has a poor economic base. So if you look on the left-hand side, it actually shows, the top side, which is redistribution of resources. The local government fiscal framework needs to be sensitive in that it distributes resources while being aware of the context this municipality performs. And also, as you can see, okay, so if you look at this graph, there's performance on the left, on the vertical axis, and context on the right-hand side. So, on the horizontal axis. So this spot here is actually a poor municipality that's performing badly. So the system needs to respond such that there's a greater distribution of resources relative to its context, while support in terms of resources and intervention from national and provincial government needs to also be sensitive to the circumstances. Now, if we contrast this rural municipality to that rural municipality, the system, once again,
can't we get one of your team members to
point
move the slide and then you sit this side?
And then point at both sides?
And point at this, because the members are all looking this way. Now,
okay,
I'm afraid they're next to...
Do you want me to stand in the middle somewhere?
Yeah, you can, if you want to.
Okay. Okay, thank you. So if you look here, the distribution of resources is more way sensitive to context. I'm not blocking anyone now. Let me.
That's what I was saying. Just sit there. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. So the system redistributes money based on context. So the system redistributes money based on the context of the rural municipality, while recognizing that this is much performing much better. The support would be less, but the performance incentives would be more to maintain such levels. So the point of this graph is that you would need a system that's very sensitive to context and performance issues, which is what differentiation needs to be based on in the LGFF as proposed. Next one. So this builds on to our recommendations based on differentiation. Without going into the detail, and to reiterate, we would need a system that is sensitive to both contexts, because if you just sensitive to one, it gives the impression that you would be rewarding poor performance, which is something that has been raised in our previous meetings in this public hearing. So being sensitive to both context and performance issues is important. So the recommendations here just go into the details of some of the variables that need to be considered for context, such as poverty, economic activity, which is out of the control of municipalities, relative to performance issues, such as your debt collection, expenditure efficiency, vacancy rate, etc. Okay, so the issue of performance and context leads to the ultimate funding from a grant perspective for municipalities in the country. So what this does is that this more or less explains the context of the vertical division of revenue. So what the vertical division does in terms of the local government sphere is that it takes into consideration its expenditure mandates relative to its own revenue capacity and attempts to ensure that the gap from transfers is filled so that local government can do what's expected of them. So in coining this fiscal gap or structural gap, the fiscal gap, we distinguish what we call a structural gap and an actual gap. The difference between these two is that the structural gap looks at the cost in providing services, a reasonable level of services, or as defined in norms and standards, relative to their own revenue capacity. And then ultimately the fiscal framework should provide transfers to fund this. Now, on the other side is the actual gap, whereby we also need to, and this is where the performance aspect comes in, we also need to be very sensitive to the inefficiency in providing services and the inefficiency in collecting revenues that can also increase this gap more than, so it requires more transfers per se, but not because of inefficiencies in the system. So one of the main aims of this review process was to actually attempt to quantify this vertical fiscal gap here, and also the horizontal gap, which I will get to further on. Okay, so in quantifying this gap, so this is the gap between the difference between what's needed for expenditure and the revenue potential of these municipalities, and what on aggregate what transfer should be required. So in estimating this fiscal gap, we found that in the vertical division, or that gap for operating expenditures, so this is your incurred expenditures for immediate service delivery, such as your bulk purchases and your labor costs, etc. We estimated this gap without grants to be 21 billion. So from our analysis, we see that the total LES package, or the grants intended for operating expenditure, was sufficient to cover this gap for the 2009-10 financial year, based on our estimates. So we feel that the quantum of resources allocated to local government for operating expenditure seems to be sufficient from a vertical division, but there were issues in the horizontal division. So this is the division of revenue to the sphere, but the was fine, but the division amongst the municipalities within the sphere, there were problems around it. And I will touch on the horizontal division a bit later. And just to point out that the review of the current of the local government equitable share formula, which the commission, along with SAGA, National Treasury, COCTA, and STATSSA were involved in, we feel that this review actually solves this horizontal problem, which I will show later on. However, on the vertical division of revenue or filling the gap required for capital expenditure, we feel that there is still a shortfall there. Based on our estimates, we estimated that gap to be 42 billion rand without grants. However, the grants for, and this is for 2009-10, the grants for that year was 16.8 billion, meaning that there is currently a 25 billion rand gap in terms of the grants needed for infrastructure spending in the country for the 2009-10 financial year. So this is now, having looked at the vertical division, we attempted to get it down as to estimating the gap across the different types of municipalities. So just for referencing, your A's are your metros, your B are your secondary cities, your B2s are your larger towns like your Neisner's, your B3 are your smaller towns, and your B4 are mainly your rural municipalities. So we found that this gap, which was estimated at 21 billion, was mainly in your B4s, which means that the problem we had with the previous equitable share formula was that it sent money more towards the left-hand side and experienced the gap at the B4s. But however, with the review of the equitable share formula, there's been a greater distribution of the equitable of the Elliott funds to your B4s in attempt to fill the horizontal inequities. So this is to show how the review of the equitable share formula actually sorted out this gap. So your first bar was actually the allocation based on the old equitable share formula, and the third one or the second two are the impact on allocation of the new formula. So as you can see, there has been if you compare this one to this one, there actually has been more funds geared towards your rural municipalities. And we feel that it assists in trying to solve this horizontal fiscal gap that did exist at your rural municipalities. And this just shows that if you look at the context of expenditure need within these municipalities, so for example, if you look at this bar, which shows the share of total households, you see your urban municipalities and your rural municipalities relatively have the highest share of these households, and now get the highest share of the equitable share. So the new formula better reflects the demographic expansion needs, which assist in filling the gap. This is just to show how the new formula better reflects the revenue ability. Now, if you compare this large bluish one, the revenue capability of the different types of municipalities decline as you go towards your rural areas, but if you can just see to it with the new formula, it actually increases the other way. So it's much more reflective of the potential to raise revenues based on, in terms of the new formula and the distribution of resources. Yeah, so from the operating side, we feel that the horizontal, the vertical division is sufficient, while the review of the formula has assisted in sorting out certain horizontal or the distribution of resources across municipalities, any inequities around there. However, this is the vertical gap, or the 42 billion estimated at the horizontal level, so across the different types of municipalities. So as you can see, there's still issues in terms of the vertical funding, in terms of the funding for infrastructure or for capital expenditure. So based on that analysis, the Commission recommends a review of the funding instruments for capital expenditure or for infrastructure expenditure, particularly on the infrastructure grant side and the sources of capital funding. And just to note that government is busy with a review of the infrastructure grants, which the Commission will be involved in. Okay, moving on to the next issue raised, and I think this is an issue that's also been quite common, is the infrequent update of the grant formulae that informs the local government fiscal framework. We all know that with the 10-year census, we find that grants or the formulae such as the equitable share are only updated once every 10 years. Now, the problem with this, there's two issues with that. The first issue is that when you do update it, you're going to have the need for large phasing in type arrangements. So, for example, with the new equitable share formula, there's a 5-year phasing in. Due to the large changes in the formula when just the data is updated for the 10-year gap. So just to give you an example, some municipalities without any phasing in, if you just had to update the formula with a 2001 census to 2011 census, you would have changes in allocations in the positive to 73 to 83%, while some would lose 41 to 49% without any phasing in. So the problem with that is not only the phasing in terms of a technical aspect, but the fact of the matter is that during those 10 years, the funds from the equitable share were not following where expenditure need was and the demand for services was. So the funds weren't following the people. It was just static. So based on this, the Commission has made previous recommendations on the data issue, and it's reiterated in this process. We feel that the Local Government Data Forum, which is a forum set up and run at the National Treasury, needs to be strengthened in terms of its mandate. So its mandate was to rationalize the data requests that go to local government, which we feel is still an important thing to do. But we also feel that the mandate of this forum needs to be extended to collate and update local government data collected by departments, because the thing we found was that you had many departments having a lot of local government related data, but the stakeholders don't really know about it. So that's a recommendation there. And also to explore the methods to fill in the gaps, or explore some methods to fill in the gaps in between censuses. So related to that, the Commission also recommends that CSSA conduct the census every 5 years, which is what is stipulated in the Act. The final aspect that I'll be looking at would be the conditional grants and issues around them. So this graph shows the issue of conditional grants proliferation. In 2003-04, government, based on an FFC recommendation, looked at consolidating the conditional grant framework, which you see. So this graph shows the number of conditional grants in the local government system. So following that recommendation and government position, you would see a largely consolidation of the grants just at 10. However, from the 2007-08 financial year, you see a large increase in the number of grants. Now, increasing the conditional grants is fine based with new policies coming up, but what you see in between here is that you have a lot of breakup of grants and grant objectives are being replicated. So in terms of it does pose an administrative burden on both the national department and the municipalities, who are already capacity constrained to handle all of these grants, especially those that are duplicated. So this graph shows an issue of whether conditional grants are actually targeted or going to the right municipalities. So this shows the capacity building grants per poor households based on the category of municipality. Now you see the capacity building grants are mainly going to your B3s, while evidence shows that capacity issues are mainly in your rural municipalities. So the rural municipalities are even getting less per poor household than your B1s or your secondary cities. So based on some of our analysis, these are some of our recommendations on the conditional grant framework. Many of these have been reiterated in previous commission recommendations. So the commission recommends a rationalization of the conditional grant system to consolidate grants where possible, to minimize the administrative burden placed on both the transferring and the receiving department or municipality, and then some details around that, and where the introduction of a new grant is necessary, there should be explicit objective performance targets, monitoring mechanism, required capacity building. In certain instances, you see a new grant coming in, but there's issues whether the local municipality or the municipality can spend such funds. Then the Commission further recommends that the commission itself be consulted directly before a new conditional grant is introduced into the system as per Section 214 of the Constitution. Okay, so this just continues on some of the recommendations on conditional grants. It's important that government implements existing legislation to withhold conditional grants for perennial underspenders. But although we feel that just withholding grants doesn't really solve the problem, it should also be seen as an instance or an indicator that this municipality that's unable to spend grants needs support or capacity building to ensure that they can absorb the funds. And there should not be a shift in grant administration in an attempt to solve the problem. So in instances where you have spending issues on a specific grant, just transferring the grant from one national department to another doesn't seem to solve the problem. And then these are just some additional specifications for the transferring officer of the national department in terms of monitoring such grants, in terms of a comprehensive analysis of the outcomes of the grant allocations and whether the grant spending actually results in outcomes and outputs. Okay, thank you. Through your chair, can I please pass on to Dr. Ngube?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to take you through the last issues which were raised in our public hearings. The first issue I'm going to look at is on revenues. That we see in that particular slide that there is some evidence of grant dependency in the local government sector. If you look at the green bars there, they are declining, and those are service charges, and compare that with the blue bars there, which are increasing, those are grants. You can see that there is really a trade-off of some sort there, and we are not really saying that grants are actually displacing on revenue efforts, but there is something which is happening. There could be a number of factors which explain that, but we see that particular trade-off that you give grants, then the on revenues there are declining. Then we move on to the next graph about on revenues again, about revenues in general in municipalities. We see that consumer debt is also a big challenge there. Those blue graphs are increasing, implying that there's a problem of collecting some of those debts among municipalities, which means that a number of municipalities really are compromised in terms of delivery, because they cannot collect as much as they would want to collect. So there's a problem with on revenues, there's a problem with consumer debt, and the Commission has met a couple of recommendations on those particular issues. First, the Commission recommends that municipalities should explore new and innovative methods of generating revenues and also of collecting outstanding debt, including taking advantages of new technologies like prepaid metering systems. Those are the technologies which can be used to collect more revenues and minimize debt. And also on tariffs, the Commission recommends that municipalities should ensure that tariffs are cost reflective and they are sensitive to indigent populations. That sometimes we find that municipalities try to build indigenous populations, but they will not get anything. Then, as a result, so we're saying that this practice will ultimately result in poor households not getting built for services they cannot afford to pay for. So tariffs must be sensitive to indigenous populations. Then the Commission also supports the devolution of additional tax powers to metros and other urban areas to support their economic growth mandate, especially in the urban built environment. But we make a proviso on that one that this should not compromise the greater macroeconomic policies and stability, economic stability of the country. And we also looked at the fuel levy issue, which has been controversial. There are some questions around the fuel levy. Is it an own revenue or a transfer? municipalities have no control over the generation or allocation of that particular of fuel levies. Then we also, questions were asked on whether these, if they are transfers, then is the fuel sales as a proxy for that one? Is it a good proxy for this particular issue? So there were so many questions. I think the issue there is some need for clarity on the fuel levy going forward, and we make a recommendation specifically to that one that there needs to be a review of the sharing of the general fuel levy within metros. And the argument goes on, and we say that government needs to find a permanent replacement for the RISC levies for the district municipalities. And also on electricity, we make a recommendation that, as we know that municipalities are constitutionally assigned the electricity distribution function, and also they are legislatively entitled to apply a surcharge on the electricity tariffs charged. Then we say that in instances where ESCOM is the service provider on behalf of the municipalities, then the municipality's consent should be allowed to impose a surcharge on ESCOM tariffs. So then the other issue which was raised in our public hearings and which FSC has been really concerned about is the performance of municipalities. And in that particular scope, we look at the efficient and effective use of resources within municipalities. We know that there is a problem, there are challenges there in the efficient and effectiveness in the use of resources in that particular sector. And we see that in many forms that there are challenges there whereby it manifests through poor service delivery, underspending, poor audit outcomes, as Jugal pointed out, and violent protests, we've seen all that. Then that particular graph there simply illustrates the poor performance in that particular sector as shown by the audit outcomes. If you look at disclaimers there, how high they are during that particular period, it illustrates the point that resources are not being efficiently or effectively used in that particular sector. And also, taking the argument further on municipal performance, we show there that if free basic services, FBS, there. If you look at the blue graphs there, these are indigenous populations which have been identified in municipalities. But if you look at the red ones there, these are indigenous populations who are actually receiving free basic services. So there's a gap between those who have been identified and those who are actually receiving. So it means there are some people who are supposed to be receiving those services, but they are not really getting those free services. So that goes to the heart of the problem, municipal performance. Then in terms of recommendations on that, we are saying that the formula-based grant mechanism should implicitly or explicitly reward good performance and not reward poor performance. Let me say on that one, in our annual submission, which will be tabled very, very soon, I think on the 24th of May, if I'm not mistaken, we have really a chapter which deals with the issue of rewarding performance and where performance is bad, where there should not be incentives. So we discussed that particular issue that there is need to reward good performance, municipalities which are performing well, and also to sanction those municipalities which are not performing well. So the Commission supports measures to incentivize good performance and penalize poor performance. Then we extend that argument to say that when determining current year allocations, all conditional grant allocations should explicitly account for past spending and outcomes performance, that it should not just be money coming in, but we should consider
the performance of that particular municipality in the past. And also the commission supports the withholding of unspent grants, but we note that such measures could be futile if they are not accompanied by capacity building initiatives, that when you withhold grants to a municipality, that particular process must be accompanied by trying to improve the efforts to improve the performance of the municipality. Then the context, as we are talking of this performance-based system, that we should reward performance. The Commission has come up with a sort of a framework for having that particular, carrying out that particular recommendation. If you look at that particular graph, there is the light green shaded part there, and there is the dark part. I want to contrast these particular two. And if you look at on the axis, on the left-hand side, we have at the bottom poorly performing municipalities. Then you go up, you have well-performing municipalities. So when we talk of incentives, we are saying that, for example, if a municipality is poorly performing, depending on what are the causes of that poor performance, we need support at the bottom. But as you go up, when a municipality is performing very well, well-performing municipalities, we need incentives to kick in. That's where we are saying at the bottom there, when a municipality is performing not very well, there must be capacity building transfers. There must be the way to go, build capacity in those municipalities so that they perform well. But as you go up, that's when you need incentives to come in. That's where you see the shaded part becomes stronger as you go up, that you need incentives to kick in, and so that municipalities can be encouraged to perform better. So that really is a framework for understanding the issue of performance and how performance should be rewarded within municipalities. Then in that particular context of improving municipal performance, the Commission notes that the local government sector needs to improve to ensure that the local government fiscal framework issues which we have raised are achieved. There should be internal controls. The local government sector should act on the Auditor General's concerns, and also that there should be greater support for the local government sector from other spheres as per Section 154 of the Constitution. There should be improved monitoring and evaluation in that particular sector, and also improvement in capacity support. And there should be direct and structured interventions, which I'm going to illustrate in the next slide, that interventions in that particular sector must be structured. That's what this particular slide really shows, depending on the context, that at the bottom where institutional performance, for example, is really problematic, the red area there, then that's where we can talk of legal interventions. Then when we go up, we have hands-on support, whereby there must be support and capacity building initiatives. And you go up there where performance is adequate, then you have support and some advice there. Then when there is excellent performance, there must be regulatory oversight and coordination there. So simply, that is a framework which we agree with DICOG on that one. They have also espoused that kind of framework in terms of how to intervene when municipalities are not performing and when they are performing very well. Then as per the recommendations on that particular area on improving intergovernmental relations, There is need for a review of the capacity and performance of national provincial departments and provincial treasuries as far as supporting municipalities that are in trouble. We need to support the municipalities, so there is a need to review how these other institutions give their support to municipalities. And also, the Commission recommends stricter implementation of regulations to establish intergovernmental forums. Let me qualify that one. We are not saying that we need extra regulations on top of other regulations. It's a sector which is already overregulated. What we are saying that there must be stricter enforcement of those regulations, stricter implementation of regulations, not a layer of other regulations. On that, then thirdly, we are saying there should be greater effort should be made to promote the sharing of information and learning by doing across the local government sector. And lastly, as per Section 105 of the Municipal Systems Act, national and provincial governments should ensure that for every legislation, for laws and regulations, there is a need for a financial impact analysis. The impact of that regulation or law should be ascertained before it is implemented, because some of these regulations have far-reaching financial and fiscal implications. We need to understand that before they are implemented. Then lastly, we look at the issue I mentioned about sometimes there is lack of coordination, we see violent protest and so forth. We came up with some recommendations on improving the social contract, how the society or communities should work with together, especially within municipalities. The implementation of laws and regulations that support and impose the need for community consultation can only be improved by sound political and administrative support from other spheres of government. The issue of consultation is important within that particular sphere, and we add on that and note that municipalities need to ensure that community consultation is not simply undertaken as a matter of legal compliance only, but that communities should be actively involved in, especially in the budgeting process. And further on, commend that ward councillors need to strengthen their roles in the consultation process, and council in particular needs to improve its oversight role within municipal governance structures. And government needs to review the mechanisms available to promote and strengthen social accountability. Then with those, I think I'll stop there, and Commissioner Tanya will give us the key messages which came from these hearings. Thank you.
Honourable members, Honourable Chair, I think the report is very dense and there's a lot of facts and figures in it because we try to do evidence-based recommendations. So I think it's quite important to just extract what are the key messages. But before we look at the content of the report again, I must note that this was the first time that the FFC had ever tried to do a public hearing. It's a departure from the way we normally do our research. And what was very important was the process that we went through, because we discovered that there were CFOs and practitioners in municipalities who didn't understand the formula. And I just want to acknowledge National Treasury for putting the formula and the allocations and the spreadsheets on their website so that every individual municipality can go in there and see how that was actually calculated. So I think that the process was very important. We at the FFC, we look at systems, like, okay, we do formulas, we look at categories of municipalities, A, B, C, municipalities, B1, B2, B3. But I think that this was an opportunity for individual municipalities, rural municipalities, to say, look, this is how it impacts on us, right? So I think that that was a valuable contribution which we wouldn't normally have had from the way we approach these things. So I think that the key message is that some progress has been made. We fully agree with the need for the differentiated approach. As my colleagues have pointed out, when we look at the vertical division and we look at operating expenditure, we find that for the sphere as a whole, that was adequate. We fully support what National Treasury and DCOG have done in terms of revising the local government equitable share formula to make sure that it's targeted better at rural municipalities. I think the challenge now is to make sure that those rural municipalities, while getting these additional funds, actually spend them properly and make sure that indigents who should be receiving services do actually receive those services. We do, however, acknowledge that while there has been progress on the short term, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done to make sure that we have a sustainable local government fiscal framework. The LES, the Local Government Equitable Share, is an important part of that framework, but it's not the whole framework, right, okay? So the areas that we need to look at is this vertical fiscal gap in relation to capital expenditure and rehabilitation. And as my colleague mentioned, we will be participating in government's review of infrastructure grants to see if we can contribute to those. The revenue situation is also something that must be given a longer-term consideration in the local government fiscal framework. As we see increasing grant dependence, even in fiscally strong municipalities like metros, we reiterate what we've said about conditional grants. Especially concerning is the targeting of capacity-building grants, because without that capacity building being synchronized with increased spending levels, we can't be sure that those increased allocations are actually going to be translated into service delivery for the beneficiaries who most need them. And then in terms of transitional implementation arrangements, we also need to look at enforcing competency standards. As the committee will be aware, the Municipal Finance Management Act competencies, there was a five-year deadline for people to come up to speed. In 2014, that deadline ends. In the Municipal Systems Act, there will also be regulations for competencies of Section 57 managers. So those basically need to be enforced as soon as possible. So I think that when you look at the report, there should be nothing new here. There is actually very little new insight that comes from the report itself. A lot of these trends have been in the local government sphere. I think that where something new needs to come in is how do we respond to this, especially given the worsening global and domestic economic circumstance, which means that in the medium term, there isn't going to be new money. So we have to optimize what we have. Okay, with that, I'm going to hand over to the acting chair.
I think, no, thanks, Tanya. Chairperson, I think we must just hand back to you at this point, and we can engage with the discussion.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kumalo and the commissioners. Yes, indeed, the report covers most of the things that have been there, and it's just strengthening our thoughts and discussion around issues affecting that level of government. Honourable members, that concludes the presentation by the FFC in terms of the work that they have done around this. I will now allow for your, if there are any questions for clarity or engagements on the presentation, comments or views that you might have as different members. MEC Dube, you are welcome. Thank you very much for attending, ma'am. Honorable Joseph, your hand was up, and then it will be followed by Honorable Memela and Honorable Liz. And if there's anything from provinces, you are more than welcome to also participate.
I will not limit participation to members only. I will allow even officials representing MECs to make some reflections. You will then come later, Mr. Radikwanza. Honorable Joseph.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm going to start off by the very last statement Ms. Ajay made about there won't be more money, if I heard you correctly. I'm a bit taken aback by that statement, because obviously every year the budget increases. So I can't accept that you say there's no more money, or there can't be more money. Then it means you're telling me the budget is not going to increase, the national budget. Or it's not going to increase in the area that you spoke about now, particularly municipalities, which is the most important level now, given what's going on in the country. I don't know where to ask or place my next point. I'm going to make the statement about there is no more money from fiscal, because we are going to give Zimbabwe 916 million rand, or it's almost a billion rand. We are going to support our peacekeeping forces. The money is just popping up from cabinet if there's a need somewhere else in the world or in Africa or in Zimbabwe. Not that we mustn't help, but I'm saying the money is just popping up there from the Minister of Finance. And we need this critical upgrading, improvement of our the very same people, the poor, the poverty, the point that you raised on page 4. You know, the Commission's proposals there about the issues on poverty, population density, migration, debt collection. The municipality was struggling with debt collection. They need that support. It's very clear in the country that the debt collection is going down, but you are saying yourself that we need that support. So we need money and capacity for that support, but I'm just worried about your statement that you're saying that we've got to do more with less, if I interpret you correctly. And then I just want to know, my last point, Honorable Chair, the last 2 points is the capacity building versus the poor infrastructure or the skills that moves to the cities, because you are giving a lot to rural development, which is important. But the census, and I think that is the issue that you have raised yourself, that wasn't done in 2006, so which means the census of 2011 is 10 years old, which means the municipalities cannot budget properly, particularly the cities, the big cities, if there's a movement of people at a pace. And the municipalities and the metros can't just keep up with that. And that is now what we're sitting with. And then I would like to know this new school that the public administration announced that will start in November for public service internal learnership. And if that should not also apply to local government in particular, which is critical, or if it's going to be inclusive, or it's going to be separate, or is it excluded at this moment? Because it's quite big news, but my understanding is public service and not local government, so I would like to know what are we going to do about allocating money to because you also made a statement that 2014 is a cut-off for municipal managers and chief financial officers and very critical leadership that we've gone around and seen on our oversight that there is a problem with those areas in some of the municipalities, but what are we going to do about it financially to make sure that the people that have a qualification and not the experience, that they also get the support for that? Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. I hear the talk of now incentives. What yardstick will be used to measure that, for starters? In cases of the very poor municipalities, where there is very, very limited revenue or none whatsoever, how are we going to actually try and encourage those municipalities to actually try and work harder? Because In most of the cases, it's the departments that are actually driving those municipalities to score zero. They're not paying what they're supposed to be paying into those municipalities. And the worst enemy is Public Works, amongst the others. If you talk of those incentives, the reference cited here might be for the metros. Is there a way of saying for those very poor municipalities be given something as an encouragement and ensure that we actually monitor each and every move towards getting clear audit? Whilst I'm talking around that, you hear that some of those municipalities, because they failed to give glorious reports about what is happening within their constituencies, are then labeled as, I'll be harsh and say they're useless, whereas it's not because of their own making, but no one seems to be actually hands-on in building capacity within those areas. And that worries me. And bear in mind, some of these municipalities have been in the wrong hands for a longer period. And then all of a sudden, ANC takes up and inherit the rot. So what, Commissioner, what do you have at hand to address that? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much to the Commission. This is a subject which leads to a lot of emotional responses on the ground, and thank you for tackling it in a way that is very professional. Not that I'd agree with everything, but it's certainly professional and well presented, and one can follow it very carefully. I think one of the biggest restrictions you have, Mr. Kamalo, is indeed your opening remarks, that you have to take as given certain things, and therefore your recommendations really failed to take into account a much broader possibility. You've got to just look at what's given and then give recommendations. So that is unfortunate. So, but given that that is your given, thank you for doing what you've done. The whole skewing of revenue that you're trying to achieve to rural municipalities, did in your analysis you take into account the urbanization that takes place in South Africa and throughout the world? In fact, it's a phenomenon that takes place and will continue to take place. And in addition, did you take into account the very much larger unit cost of providing services in rural municipalities, and that the efficiencies of doing it there are very much lower than doing it in an urban environment? And again, this, I suppose, comes from where you take starting point is. So your recommendations don't kind of include a recommendation to encourage urbanization, to decrease the cost of providing services. The fuel levy is an interesting one. I'm not sure which one of the two of you dealt with the fuel levy. I mean, the ring fencing of the fuel levy doesn't take place anymore. It just goes into general funds. So are you suggesting that this levy now be ring fenced? and then be allocated to the area in which it's raised. I'm not sure why I'm following the fuel levy thing very well, because as you said, it's a very contentious issue at the moment. It's not specifically been used for roads. It's just into general funds and allocated where the budget chooses. Now, the own revenue collection, I mean, that obviously is a big problem. Did you look at the possibility of... All right, let me start here. One of the most inefficient revenue streams for spheres of government, particularly local government, is this whole question of one sphere of government paying another. You have huge administrations on both sides. You have huge arguments. You have, it's so inefficient. What about simply recommending that the whole question of rating government departments or state departments be eliminated, and the funds that are transferred to those departments in turn to be used for payment of rates be included in the equitable share? Imagine the cost savings involved. No arguments about the public works not having paid their rates account. Just simply cut it out of the formula altogether. Was that considered? Then the RSC levies, I mean, I hope that you guys don't come in with a recommendation to reinstate those hugely expensive administrations to collect a must and. I mean, it is so inefficient. So some other revenue source, okay, but let's forget about RSC levies. I don't know whether you are actually recommending. I wasn't sure. The own revenue collection, I think there was mention there of incentives. Let me give you an example of an incentive in my own municipality, which, I mean, is completely horrifying. There's a group of ratepayers who have chosen not to pay their rates for the last 4 years. They've got away with it because they're not supplied electricity by the municipality, they're supplied by Eskom. And now the municipality is offering them a 60% discount on their rates for the past 4 years. I mean, surely that's an incentive not to pay rather than an incentive to pay. It's the most astounding thing. So these incentives are really very dangerous if they're not structured well, because the consequential behavior of ratepayers could be quite negative. So I would love to see some research on your part about what kind of incentives really could be brought in. The whole question of Eskom is really a serious one when it comes to municipalities. It's the only leverage that municipalities really have, other than going the legal route and then trying to sell property, which is a long, drawn-out thing. Just please your case. People pay very quickly. But most municipalities in rural areas in particular are hamstrung because Eskom refused to participate in such an arrangement with them. And I would love to see that kind of recommendation included in your recommendations. The question of performance and how you reward and sanction performance. On paper, it looks good. You can identify poor performance, and you can sanction by holding back on funds, and you can reward good performance. But ultimately, what we're hoping for is everyone to perform well. Then where's the money going to come from then to reward all municipalities that are performing well? You see, it's a short-term incentive which could become a long-term consequential hit nightmare. I think that the Honourable Mamela hit it on the head, really. We're talking about spheres of government here. Performance, sanction and reward should come from voters. Not one sphere of government acting as big brother to another sphere. And I know that the Constitution allows a certain amount of that. But at the end of the day, the real performance judges have to be the voters. And I wonder whether that shouldn't be one of your recommendations, that we shouldn't interfere too much. I mean, there are extreme cases where there is interference required. Now, the question of the rural indigent not receiving, I think that was the graph, indicated that your metros, there was almost a balance between identified indigent and people who are getting the free basic services. But I would like to know whether in the rural areas where there's clearly a disjuncture there, how much of that is as a result of the lack of capex to actually get the services to the people, as opposed to the money simply be used to buy the mayor a new Q9 or Q7 or something? And again, then it gets back to my point about the cost of providing infrastructure in deep rural areas like my own home constituency, and terrain that's almost impossible to service properly, and the urbanization. Mr. Chairman, thank you for your indulgence.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to all honorable members and the staff members that are around here. You know, Chairperson, I am really not a member of this committee, and I think I should not be a member of this committee, otherwise I will go mad within one day. No, you are very intelligent. You are very intelligent. You are very, very much intelligent. I'm looking at the recommendations and the equitable shares that are reported here. I'm thinking of the same issue that was raised by you, Honorable Memela, on rural municipalities. Now I'm not talking about rural municipalities far from them. I reside in a rural municipality where there is nothing, absolutely nothing, being collected by the municipality. I mean, they depend on grants. And now, if we have to come up with a strategy, I'm really saying you are really intelligent in this committee, because I wouldn't have any strategy in Sterkspruit, KwaNomlengana, and those areas there around there, a strategy of collecting revenue in those municipalities, in that municipality. In fact, Ijogabi as a whole, including Obama, Mount Fletcher, and the other areas, because there is nothing. I want you to come up with your own strategy. How can we do it as that municipality? In Kanduli, that area is very fast. There's a big population in that area. Very, very, very poor. How do you collect revenue within those areas so as to lower grants that are being given for those people? I wanted to raise the issue of traditional leaders. You've been doing your research around the country. What have you come up out of those traditional leaders? Because I understand in other areas there are levies that are being paid by people to the traditional leaders for the, I'm not sure, is it the rates or rates and taxes or what is, what have you involved the traditional leaders in those areas? Because the other areas are being led by them and with their own way of doing things that is totally different to what you are doing as we are doing as a government. Let me involve myself. We are doing as government.
Thanks, sir. Chair, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and the members of the SFC. Thank you for your presentation. You know, the presentation starts with very good key areas, the problem statement, very articulated, but as it goes, starting to talk about attaining equity in vertical and horizontal, I think that's where then you say there's no new money. But the issues of what the Honourable Member was talking about, the dependency and the urbanization vis-a-vis ensuring that the rural areas are also uplifted so that those people are not migrating to where they see better opportunities. How do you achieve that? Because if I give you a practical example, in KwaZulu-Natal, 28 out of 61 municipalities are more than 80% grant dependent. Now, from that 61, you have 44% that is more than 50% grant dependent. Now, you have to provide services to those communities, as the Honourable Member was correctly putting it. There's one municipality in the Big Five Falls Bay. Majority of that area is the Hlulhlwe Game Reserve. Now, we're trying to merge it with another next-door neighbour. But if you look at it, it's poor cousins. Now, where do you go? FFC says there's no new money. We spoke about at one stage that the issue of I agree with you that the grants should be looked at and they should be direct and explicit. But it always worries me when we talk about the integration of the grants, because there are various problems, and the issue of differentiated approach is the best way to go, because in one area, for instance, we've been calling for the replacement of that once-off grant, or the transformation grant, as we used to call it at the time. And if you look at when municipalities were established in 2000, and when the municipalities were established, we had different phases. We had the pre-interim, we had pre-pre-interim, we had interim, we had transformation stage, we had, you know, stabilization stage. We had various stages that we envisaged. But if you look at municipalities now, there are others that have never gone out of one stage. And if you look at the symptom, trying to find out what made this municipality not to stand up even on its knees, you trace some of the problems to the way they were established and the fact that since establishment, there has never been any injection of life into it. And if there's no injection of life into it, it will never be able to live on its own because there's nothing. They can't collect anything. There is no transfers that are enabling it to live and to be able to, as you're saying, creatively look at how they can collect revenues. The systems are just not there. And it also talks to one area that perhaps you also need to look at ourselves critically, the kind of national and provincial support that is given to municipalities by these spheres of government. Because if you look at the audit outcomes and you look at where did the ball fall, you will see that in one area you'll be looking what support is being given to municipalities by either Treasury, what support of to municipalities is given by local government departments. Is that support adequate or is it directed to where the problems are in terms of the symptoms that we've seen day in and day out being suffered by municipalities. I agree that we have to look at the revenue source of district municipalities. We spoke about, in the 58th conference, we spoke about the differentiated approach to district municipalities in terms of which one has got capacity to do what in each local municipality. Because even the district municipalities themselves, I mean, if we look at them, some of them are not even viable. Others, municipalities, local municipalities, are more stronger than districts. And you say, then why would the district then spend its time to a municipality that is able to do things rather than focus on those that are not able to do things? But what support, financial support, does that district have to be able to assist those ailing municipalities? In a way that we have established in our province what we call shared services model to achieve the economies of scale. The shared services model assists you because at least if you have that capacity at district level, whether it's internal audit committee or engineers and surveyors, at least you are technicians, you are able then to ensure that those people are shared within those municipalities that are not able to either attract those kind of skills or even retain those kind of skills because of the nature of the work they have to do. I think the issue of grant funding having to be sensitive to the needs of the people is the issue that we should be talking about. If you look at the public protest, and you say, why are people complaining that there's no houses, there's no roads, there's no water, there's no electricity? And you say, who should be providing these services? Where is the money supposed to be coming from to provide water, electricity, houses, where the housing function belongs to either the province or the national government? What is the role of municipalities in ensuring that these services are delivered, and where is the money being kept? Because we're talking about the financial resources here. Where is it? So I think perhaps we might need to reflect on these issues, for me, looking at the realities that we're facing. I think things are changing. If you look at 3 years ago, you would have come up with a different diagnostic analysis. If you look at the situation now as we talk, with the unemployment rate, people, even those that were able to pay at that time, they're not able to pay. Not only are you looking at the indigent, you're looking at the older people who own houses, who might at that time would have been able to pay rates. If you have a policy of deferment of rates to the elderly because they don't have any income, if you defer those rates, how are you going to dispose of those assets once they're deceased? Because that on its own, you have third generations in those communities, and you can't dispose of those without having to affect the livelihood of those communities. Now, I'm just trying to illustrate the point that perhaps we need to look at the realities and look at what is it really that could assist us. To me, I've seen the local economic development or rural economic development playing a bigger role in terms of, making people to be able to sustain their livelihood in whatever small scale, that we might be able to inject some grants towards uplifting at least the livelihood of the community, so that whether you have small industries that are able to pay, whether you have businesses that can be attracted to invest there, whatever you have to generate some activity in terms of the economy, so that not only you're talking the indigent list that is increasing, but you're talking about generating some activity, economic activity, to ensure that people are able to pay. I didn't hear you talking about the tourism levy, because that one I always wonder, why is this levy just not being touched? Because to me, and if you look at how much for instance, eThekwini municipality is spending on the Durban in Convention Center to attract conferences, investments, and all of that. And where is that money going? To the hotels, yes. Hotels, if you see a hotel 100% full, who's benefiting? Where is it that those beds that are full for the whole year, if they're full for the whole year, what is the benefit to the city if it's spending so much money to attract those conferences and investment to come? So I think it might be something that we might be needing to look at. Again, on the grants, the last point is the issue of the CAPEX and OPEX. How are these structured to assist municipalities that don't have any base? So that at least we've been insisting that municipalities should budget for operations and maintenance. Now, operations and maintenance versus rolling out of that infrastructure that does not exist, yes. We want them to roll out infrastructure. As they roll out infrastructure, the ones that have laid down, it age quickly because it's not being maintained. But how do you maintain, if you're collecting, if you pay water or electricity 500 rands and you can only collect 20 rands, that's unsustainable. And there's no way that can ever be sustainable. So the issue really of a collection of by municipalities and the payment of services to me is one issue where we should be looking at how are we investing in areas that are going to ensure that we grow the pie and we extend the capacity of a municipality to be able to be a municipality. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, thank you very much. Deputy Chair of the NCOP, our youth leaguer, it's good to see you again. Maybe one would have said, Ngambe Makameno Waga Magetu. I want to take on this thing of AMA incentives. I don't understand why do we want to speak about incentivizing people or rewarding performance when people have performed, as if that's something that they were not supposed to do. The expectation is that when people get into an activity, they need to perform. Now they perform, we say, no, because you have performed, we want to reward you. Why do we want to do that? There's this other element where we look at, I don't know whether is it penalizing or we say we want to take away funds or money, because people did not perform to the required target. But I think what we are missing is that there are people that we are actually punishing if we want to do that. Because those that did not perform are actually not the people that are supposed to be getting a service or whatever. Why do we want to do that? I'm sure we should be innovative enough to be able to look at these things a bit differently and be able to deal with these issues where there are problems. The issue of data collection, Deputy Chair, I'm not sure what source are we using. I want to give you an example. In our area, in Mpumalanga, there's a municipality called Thabachwe. The MM, Magetu, I don't want to say he's been fired, but Simtelilouta Hambil, and Uhambil. Works out a budget.
these are the number of properties that I have in the municipality. And these properties, this is their evaluation. But guess what, Chair? There was no evaluation done on those properties. Why not? Now, lead these honorable councillors and say, this is my budget, and this is how much I'm going to collect. Instead of collecting 80 rand, goes out and collects 20 rand, despite the fact that this is what this particular individual has budgeted for. Now, you see, the credibility of that information when you go out, Bakuma, you go and say, ngizelele the information. You see, you have a problem, because I'm almost want to say, when you guys go out and do their research, they would obviously go to that MM. I'm just speaking about the credibility of this data source that we have, that you are able to juggle around and do your things. It becomes a bit of a problem. But again, in Bushbuck Ridge, the MM at the time knew exactly that, Umage, she's gone out, said it, that there's no revenue base. But because this MM wants to justify that our honorable councillors will be able to collect and able to pay for salaries for everybody, goes out and says we're going to collect half a million, well, to be precise, 560 million. But there's no revenue base, nothing, Zelch. And these are some of the problems that, in terms of the data that we're speaking about, that becomes a bit of a problem. Honorable Chair, I would want FFC to go somewhere into the archives. One particular mayor of a district in Mpumalanga, way back in 2003, I think it was 2002, was able to develop a paper on the RSC levies when Minister Manuel took a decision to abolish them. Minister Manuel wrote back and said, thank you very much, it's a very good paper to be considered, but sorry that you are late. We are not going to consider that. But maybe that we are talking about RSC levies. And that mayor is still alive. That former mayor is still alive. I'm sure I can get that mayor to assist you. Of Nkangala district at the time. Maybe you could look at that and be able to work out something, if that's what you want to consider, because I see Dr. Ngobe spoke about the issue of RSC levies. Maybe that can assist us, and also it's something that we can look at. Yeah, let me say that, Honorable Chair, I think this is one exercise that I'm just a bit worried that I don't see SALCA here. This is one element which is very important. I'm concerned, Honorable Chair, because my chairperson of SALCA in Mpumalanga is supposedly to be in this meeting. Left me yesterday and said he's coming to this meeting. And he's not here. I'm worried. Because these are some of the things that, should be assisting us going forward, because we don't want, when we go back, then we just want, people are then beginning to say that we're doing things on our own and we're not consulting and all these other manner. When we're missing an opportunity like this, we are able to interact and be able to put some perspective forward. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Yes, indeed. SALCA has been invited. Unfortunately, only this morning, the executive director says he's ill, so he can't join us. As for the provincial chairpersons, I'm not too sure because they were also invited. I'll take now Dr. Gonza, Free State.
No, Chair, thanks.
You are welcome, Honorable Sokoni. We are still deliberating on the report. Thank you very much for coming. Proceed, Mre.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think MEC Dube has been very comprehensive and could have taken a few issues that one wanted to raise, so I won't repeat them. But just to reiterate the fact that the discussions are on the local government fiscal framework, but our problem is bigger. It's an intergovernmental fiscal relation problem. It's a more bigger problem than we're looking at. And I think MEC Dube has also raised an issue of viability. It becomes also another component that whilst we are today discussing the local government fiscal framework and looking at the slice of money that is available at our disposal, obviously it's a matter of taking from Tabo to pay Tabang within a similar framework of funding available at our disposal. There's been an emphasis on a differentiated model, and I think besides the differentiated model being used at a tail end when we're looking at the resources available at our disposal, the issue is to what extent do municipalities use a differentiated model for their own planning processes, your IDP processes and so on, which are primary before you go into the financial stage in relation to those processes. And the contributions, because I think MEC Dube has also alluded to the fact of municipalities having to execute specific responsibilities. Sometimes that may be seen to be unfunded mandates, but because they are battling with daily delivery on the ground, sometimes they have to take up some of those responsibilities and ensure that they carry them out, they fund them. Others could simply be what we call reckless spending, what we see on an ongoing basis where there are concerts and festivals being sponsored by municipalities. Those are not mandatory type of function. I don't know why has it become fashionable to sponsor festivals and concerts and so on. But the critical part, Chairperson, is also around the poor financial management and the fact that we have on a number of occasions said government needs to ensure that we refine the monitoring and intervention processes. We need to be able to refine and slightly give MECs responsible for local government a better hand to deal with monitoring and intervention at municipal level, because some of these issues and some of the key issues that you are picking up are simply matters of a poor financial management, where a municipality is a large secondary city, but the assistance that it needs to get from a province, even extending to the financial assistance, is not commensurate to the extent of the size of that particular municipality. I take, for example, in the Free State, a municipality like Machabe, which for the last 5 years has been unable to appoint the CFO. Obviously, you will be faced with matters of poor financial management as an ongoing issue. And a very small municipality, which you could regard as a rural municipality, like Letseme in Harib, remains sustainable and is able to manage its resources. Its staff complement remains fully funded by the municipality itself. So you see the contradictions and the dichotomies related to that process. I also am of a view that we cannot talk about proliferation of conditional grants until such time we shall have sufficiently addressed operations and maintenance in a municipality. The fact of trying to run away from the fact that we will fund new infrastructure and not ensure that we assist municipalities to deal with operations and maintenance. Maybe the discussions around these conditional grants could actually be looking at that element specifically. To what extent do we ensure that we arrest the decay of existing infrastructure in municipalities simply because they are unable to make provision in their budget for operations and maintenance specifically? Chair, there has been reference made to declining revenue in municipalities. And on a number of occasions, we've challenged the FFC to say, is the issue of revenue decline an issue of figures? Is it what we see happening every year that this municipality was able to collect, say, 300 million, and this year they are collecting 220 million, the next year they are collecting 180 million? Is it simply based on inability to collect? Or is it really issues around economic impact, the increase in indigency? I think MEC Dube has also elaborated to a great extent on that. Is it an increase in indigency in those municipalities year in and year out? The impact of economic decline, basically, that might have an impact on revenue. It may not necessarily be a paper issue. Or a figure issue, or figures that have been indicated that this is what they used to collect and this is what they are now collecting, and therefore maybe bring about an assumption that municipalities may not aggressively be doing revenue collection. So I do not know as to whether the imposition of a surcharge on ESCOM may not simply bring about a reverse result. I've said that this before, to or reverse impact on municipalities, where ESCOM would simply ensure that that impact on such charge is transferred to the consumer, fed in one or the other, and it simply becomes an equalization mechanism in that in one or the other may not necessarily have any impact on the revenue of municipalities, but might have a direct impact on consumers themselves. When we look at the rural municipalities, Chair, the Department of Rural Development and the Land Reform has attempted to develop standards in terms of service delivery and service delivery standards in rural areas. I'm not quite sure whether this framework is sufficient. And when you talk about the funding of infrastructure provision, we might take note of those standards that have been proposed in their rural development framework strategy, and so on. And I do not know whether those standards might remain sustainable. This an honourable member who raised an issue of monies being withheld from municipalities. I'm sure, Chairperson, we might be aware of the Mokaka Constitutional Court case that has just been decided very recently around this withholding of funds and also the use of electricity consolidation of a municipal account so that you are able to ensure that you can stop gas and then people can start paying for other costs related to or attributable to a consumer. I think those are the issues that I thought I should raise, Chairperson. But I think the critical one is the monitoring and intervention, which is critical that there shouldn't be a decline, complete decline and complete collapse of the municipal administration broadly, or municipal governance, and at the tail end, we get involved through Section 139. Departments of local government in provinces are not designed to take over and run municipalities. The fact of the matter is that in most instances where we take a municipality over through 139, they actually get demobilized. You see senior management in that municipality not supporting the administrator. This administrator is now on his or on her own, and you have demobilized all other resources that are there at our disposal under normal circumstances. So the issue of how best we can arrest poor financial management through monitoring and better monitoring and intervention could actually be very critical for our purposes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That's the comments, Mr. Khumalo, from honorable members and provinces. I would request that Honorable Memela will be leaving us for another meeting shortly. I'm going to request that we have just 5 minutes break, and then thereafter, if you could then respond and prioritize the questions raised by Honorable Memela and the MECs in case they have got flight challenges in terms of time. So it's 5 to 12. We'll then resume now at 12 o'clock. Just 5 minutes tea break. Thank you.
I'm sorry, but it's
some of the key challenges that we are faced with. Now, I think one of the questions, the key questions that I would have looked at in quite some detail, because we need to do that, is the issue of incentives. It comes out very clearly across the board. Now, we need to dispel one or two myths about it, and I think the main issue is that when we talk about incentive in a transfer system, we are not necessarily talking to monetary rewards. We are talking to the institutional arrangement and how each and every component of those arrangements impacts on behavior of a municipality or of individuals within a municipality. So amongst incentive issues, we can actually look at the legislation and its implementation. So if you talk about municipal performance against certain set standards or requirements, and a municipality does not actually comply, for example, with certain requirements in terms of making information available at particular points in time, and the system is built or functions in such a way that no action is taken, even though there are laws that basically dictate that this must actually happen when this does not happen, incentives are actually influenced by that. So I think we need to just move away from the incentives in the form of financial rewards, because that's a different set of intervention. So you're just getting into a system and saying, no, we set you these targets on the basis of where you were performing. So we think that if you do this extra, we can actually give you. So you can design a grant that is like that, what we call a matching grants. You have what we call matching grants. So if we want to encourage employment of people, for example, one of our grants that's designed in such a way or tries to mimic that is the EPWP grant. And we know, all of us here, what the achievements and failures of that grant are, because designing it was probably not the best way to do it. It's done certain things, but it could have done far much better. But because it's done in isolation with other institutional arrangements within the transfer system, it becomes problematic. So the long and short of the incentives here, we are really talking about how do we influence behavior through the design of the transfer systems. And so if you have this number of grants, and this and that speaks to the HOD, from the Free State. When we talk about proliferation of grants, we are not talking about problems. Because once you start talking about grants and then linking them to individual problems and saying this problem will solve with this grant, you are not going to solve anything. Because every day you will find challenges. You've got to think about these things as, are we dealing with infrastructure? For example, let me just say that as we speak now, with the report that I said we will be tabling on Friday, the annual submission on the Division of Revenue, approaches the issue of infrastructure in local government from not just rolling out new infrastructure and maintaining what you have at current levels, but looking at refurbishing, which is a different concept altogether, refurbishing according to certain norms and standards, and then looks at how much money we are talking about in terms of the money that should go for infrastructure. Now, if you start looking at those numbers and looking at the numbers that we presented here, we have a serious problem. And if we deal with issues around that in a piecemeal approach that we have been dealing with, because there have been calls for a conditional grant for maintenance, which under ordinary circumstances, it should be something that is routine. Because we've got even legislation that deals with that. And if we're not actually implementing that legislation, we are giving the wrong incentives to the people that must do that, that you can do it and nothing actually happens. you cannot do it, and also nothing actually happens. So these are the issues that we're talking about. Let's look at what we currently have and say what is wrong with it, rather than just come in. Every time we identify a problem, then we come in with a grant to try and deal with it. If we find that this department is not delivering here, let's move this and give it to the other department. Those send the wrong incentives to municipalities about what is actually happening. So incentives are not just about monetary reward, Chairperson. They are about behavior that is built into the way the institutions actually function, and therefore the transfer system. So that is the issue around incentives that I thought I need to clarify. The issue of the rural economy and revenue source, I think we must actually understand, and I do agree with the members here, that there are some municipalities in rural areas that will never be able to actually raise any revenue unless a different type of intervention happens in that municipality, or you discover oil, or you discover gas, then there will be something that happens. If that does not happen, there is nothing. So you tell me about Mkanduli. I know that there's a friend of mine who's from Mkanduli, lots of goats and all of that, and he goes there almost like on a very regular basis because he's got lots of goats. But it's a rural municipality, and we must understand that it is actually rural. And if we talk about those goats, they probably belong to a whole range of people in the family that have got nothing. That's all that they have. So we have to understand that the rural economy has got its own specific challenges. But in the introductory slide that talks about the division of revenue and talks about the fiscal gap, we actually demonstrate that. And the way in which the formula has been revised is in such a way that those municipalities that have got the biggest gap receive not more money than the urban municipalities. So there's nothing in the formula that has punished urban municipalities for having more people. No. All that has happened is that urban municipalities, we have recognized that they have a fiscal capacity to fund some of their services in terms of the own revenue charts that you see there. But we still give them money equally for the people that actually live in there for the basic services. You then give relatively more on the basis of the gaps that you see. So what we've done is like we've changed the dimension. I'll tell you that before this new formula was implemented, what was happening is that there's been a substantial growth, and it speaks also to the HOD's question around whether it's the numbers that matter in this combination between grants and own revenue, or it's other things else. What we know for a fact is that the pool that goes to local government has been growing in terms of grants and transfers. It's been growing at a very fast rate compared to everybody else transfers from a very low base. And that will obviously change the composition of your revenue. But you've got to look at the other numbers that actually go with that. That will probably tell you that there's less effort that is actually being expended on collection. And it's a question of the economy. All of those things will actually come into play. The increased indigence, all of those will come into play. But the real issue is that what we were trying to do with the formula was to try and address a situation where, as this pool to local government was increasing, the poorer municipalities and the rural municipalities were receiving relatively less. And at some point it was by design, because they did not have the basic infrastructure. So the formula was designed in such a way that your pool increases, or your allocation increases, as you roll out infrastructure. The rollout of infrastructure has not moved as fast as one would have expected. And that is why, if you look at a graph that talks about basic services and what is spent on basic services, you see that the rural municipality is about 43% access compared to 89% access in the metros. So obviously, why must we give you money for something that you don't actually have? That's what the argument was. That's how the formula was designed. But now it's changed. The idea, it must recognize that municipalities have a responsibility to do this, And so we must actually allow them to be able to do that. So that's what has actually changed. So it addresses the question of the rural municipality without necessarily damaging what happens. And now the important aspect, which links to the issues of capacity building in those rural municipalities, and again to come back to the HOD, and I'm glad that he actually accepts that the capacity at the provincial level and even at a national level, when it comes to intervention to address problems in these municipalities, might not be what we think it is. It might not be what we think it is. But the problem that we have is that as national and provincial departments, we do not have any measures that we can use to actually track municipalities and those measures that can actually show us red flags before the situation gets dire to require this kind of legislative intervention. So we invoke this, we get to 216, we withhold, and it's unfortunate that we can have a discussion about the withholding of funds, but it's a constitutional provision. It's there in the Constitution that if this does not happen, this must actually happen. So, but I don't think that the intention of the Constitution was to say, do this. It does have safeguards to say, if you actually have these things and you're doing them properly, you should not get to that situation. That's actually the last measure that you must actually get to. And so it's important that I announce here as well that the submission that we will be tabling, informed by the experiences, partly by the experiences of the Section 100 in Limpopo and the two other provinces that actually got that, we have developed a set of indicators that we hope will assist Parliament and also government to actually be able to look at some of these things that relate to financial health or fiscal health of municipalities and of provinces, so that we avoid situations whereby we must actually now then impose the law to actually address failures in municipalities. So that's something that we will be tabling around that. And let me also say that that submission also has a chapter that deals with this story of incentives and where we are coming from with the issue of incentives as well. There's an issue around the RSC levy. Honorable Liz, I must say that there is no way that the FFC would be advocating for an RSC levy again, because we know what the problems were. We were at the forefront of calling for the reform, if anything, of that RSC levy, because, like you say, you had situations where certain municipalities were employing obomashonisa to actually go and collect the money. And I think now I can see a similar thing happening with some municipalities. They've got debt collectors to actually collect debt from, so they've sold the debt to the debt collectors, I suppose. They've improved their own, it's called revenue enhancement. that's another story. So these are issues that we still must deal with. Honorable Skosana, you raised the issue. Let me just check with the Honorable MEC Duwe first as well, because there may be some other issue that I haven't. You raised the issue of the tourism levy. I think the issue of the tourism levy is an issue that, in terms of a submission that we made when we were dealing with the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act, it was one of the revenue sources or taxes that we listed as possibilities for municipalities. So I agree with you. They must exploit them, because the Constitution and the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act allows for those. I know that some provinces actually have those tourism levies. Some of them are called bed levies. Some of them are called something else. But provinces have been utilizing them at different rates for quite some time. So it's something that can easily be tapped into as a new revenue source. We have had ambitious applications for local business taxes, which we do support in principle, but they have to be also linked to something that a municipality does. And so there are other issues that needs to be taken into consideration around that. You also spoke about the issue of balancing rural and urban migration, but I think what you were trying to highlight is the situation of the rural municipalities and viability. We have been for quite some time dealing with our stakeholders, having to field questions around the fiscal viability of different types of municipalities. And we have always shifted that story to the demarcation board. It's not us that determine or demarcate municipalities. It's an issue for the board. So all we do is like we get something about this and then we just tick a box and that's it. Now, what we have done, we have signed a memorandum of understanding with the demarcation board. So some of the people here, in fact, two people in this team, are actually working quite actively with the demarcation board on looking. In fact, my research director is not here because he's attending an assessment exercise for some of the issues that relate to exactly those questions. So I wouldn't like to preempt that on whether or not some municipalities fiscally are actually sustainable or viable, because there's an exercise that is currently underway between the board and ourselves that will actually try to answer some of those questions. There is the issue of the districts and how we fund the districts. I think, Honorable Liz, you said it's unfortunate that the commission, we can't actually take things as what the ideal should be, because the powers and functions are not resolved. I mean, we've had to deal with two different types of district municipalities that came to us asking for assistance with their resources. Let me say resources. The one was saying their equitable share is too little, and that's a municipality in the Free State. And then the other municipality was saying, no, we are doing very well with our equitable share, and we need more money to be able to do even more than we are currently doing. And both of them are districts. So when we looked at the Free State, we found that probably there were some issues that they were doing that are not supposed to be doing, because the local municipality is actually doing the same thing, so you are duplicating this. And so you start looking at all of those things, and there is a problem, which is not a problem of the fiscal framework, but it's a problem deriving from the functions that these some of these districts decide to carry on. So these things are things that are beyond the scope of this particular report. But as I said, this should also help or fit into the process that the Department of Cooperative Governance and the National Treasury had started. I am sure Mr. Sikiti there can probably tell us how far that has gone. The last time that I heard we were together, it's some time back, but I'm sure that it's something that is still in the works in the department there. The final thing that I would want to respond to with respect to Honorable MEC Dube is around the operation and maintenance. The equitable share formula in its reviewed form basically makes an allowance within the different components of basic services. I think, Jugal, you can correct me. What is that allowance? 10%? 10%, even though the guideline from the Treasury was 8. Was it 8 to... Yeah, so it's 10% allowance for maintenance. Now, What is happening, I'm sure that in the province, in KZN, I know that process is actually quite advanced. It's almost as advanced as it is with the metros and the larger cities that the National Treasury looks after. That benchmark exercise is one where one can actually then look at what is actually happening, because there's more money that's going to flow to some of these rural municipalities. But we must then look at whether their budgets actually reflect what the changes in the allocation formula basically tried to capture. So it must actually, we should be able to track that through the benchmark exercise. That's one of the things that our team at the commission, together with the National Treasury, we have tasked them to work with the National Treasury to actually check that the budgeting for maintenance going forward is something that must be dealt with. Now, I have indicated earlier, though, that there's another issue around maintenance, which is about refurbishment, which is a story that we will be contained in our submission that we are tabling. So there are some recommendations there that come up with regards to that. I think now I can move on to, Honorable Skosana, you spoke about, it's about the RS 11. I've got that report that you're talking about. So I know that report. The issue of withholding of funds, I think I have actually spoken to that in the sense that it's got some incentive effect. The issue of intergovernmental relations, HOD. I think it's important that maybe it's easier to talk about this by using an example, a real example, where I have experienced something on an oversight visit with the Select Committee on Finance, I think it was, in Northern Cape sometime a year or so ago. When Parliament does these oversight visits, departments are invited to come and speak directly on this particular issue. So whether it's the national department, it's the provincial department, they are invited to come and make an input in that process. Invariably, you find that some departments send higher-level people than others. There are some departments that send very low-level people that probably don't even understand what it means that when they are asked to respond to something, they respond in a manner that basically says to you, there's something wrong in this department. See, when you carry a conditional grant with a municipality and there is a problem with the implementation or spending around that conditional grant, and then you are asked to explain what the problems are, and then you say, no, there's no capacity, so we've decided to withhold the money. They did not spend it, we withheld it. The reflection should not be on the municipality. It should be on you. Now, because you are like operating at that level, so people can't say you must account. So they say, no, but where's the accounting officer? Because now we need to know why there is no capacity in that municipality. So those kinds of, because those are systems that are built in to ensure that our intergovernmental relations processes actually function, and we are able to actually account, and we are sending the right people to account. Because if you send somebody that you can't even ask questions of once they have said, no, we have withheld the money, and that's it, because there was no capacity to spend. That's an example that I witnessed, and I thought this is actually not a very good way of running this thing, which requires that national departments and provincial departments must capacitate municipalities. And I'm talking about a municipality in a very rural area. That municipality, if I'm not mistaken, was a municipality called Mira or something like that. So it's quite sad that you can get somebody from these spheres of government that's tasked with capacitating saying we withheld because there's no capacity. We can see that there's a problem.
So I think I'm glad that you're actually raising it as an issue that this must actually be dealt with, because it's there, and we get to withholding because somebody has not done their job properly, whether it's the people at the municipality or it's somebody at a national department level. We will never know if we don't have the correct information and systems to do it. The issue of the fuel levy, I think I will let the team, some of my team members here, speak to it. But I agree with you, Honorable Liz, that the fuel levy at this point in time, everybody wants the fuel levy. The toll people want the fuel levy. Everybody wants the fuel levy. But it's got certain dimensions to it that you can't actually rely on it in the first place, because you sell fuel at this price one day, the fuel price falls, drops down to the lowest levels this way. So if it's municipalities must share in it, Sunral must share in it, everybody else who thinks like we can. But let me leave it, because there's a technical side to the argument that is being raised here, which basically relates to the current practice with respect to how it's actually shared. And I think Jugal will respond to that. There was an issue around the School of Public Service. I don't want to respond to that one because I am not exactly well-versed. As a commission, we recently signed a memorandum of understanding, by the way, with the Public Service Commission. And what we understand is that there's a review of the Public Service Commission Act, because the Public Service Commission does not, its mandate does not extend to the local government sphere, but even though they have actually gone into the local government sphere with concurrence of the municipalities, and they told us that they're getting very good support for the programs that they're trying to do there. But in terms of the school and who it is targeting, I cannot actually answer that. But what we know, we are aware that there are moves towards a single public service, and it's things that we know they're still on the table. So I cannot actually comment on that, and certainly not on behalf of the commission, maybe on behalf of myself. The issue of no more money, I think it sounds quite like an official from the National Treasury. I think Wendy's still there. Those are the people that will tell you there's no more money. So even if there is money, you must actually explain why you need the money. Now, from what we know in terms of the fiscal framework, because we've got a three-year budget process, which is based on very objective numbers about what is available. And I think it's fairly transparent in those programs that we must actually look after. I'm not sure about what, let me not comment about the other programs that you raised, that, you know, sometimes money pops up for this. I also see those in the papers. From where I sit, looking at the framework for local government over the next 3 years, this is what is available. So unless something drastic happens outside, maybe SARS collects more money, or priorities change drastically to such an extent that in the outer, and that will only be in the outer years, that we need to change what has been allocated for local government. So we are not expecting any new money outside of what is there, and given the trends in what the revenue service is collecting. So the fiscus is definitely quite tight. That's the fiscal framework that we're working within. So I think the context for no more money is around that. So national has got its own priorities. Let's put it that way. There's a national fiscal framework, which is not what we are dealing with here. So I don't think that what was meant was that you are trading off this for that. It was simply to say the local government fiscal framework, this is what we have over the next 3 years, and the provincial fiscal framework, that's what we have, the national fiscal framework, that's what we have. What they do internally around it, let me ask Tanya to respond to some of the other questions that I might have left, but Chugal, I would like you to come back on that.
Just two I'd like to pick up on. There was a question about monitoring of the progress towards clean audits. Right. I'd like to point out that the Auditor General is auditing stakeholder commitments, and he's actually saying whether people who committed to do certain things actually did do those certain things, right, at provincial treasuries. But the main point is that it's actually council and the municipal managers themselves that have to take the primary role of monitoring. I think that from an oversight perspective, there's an opportunity for the committee to actually use the information that the Auditor General is putting on the table, because the Auditor General is actually meeting with each of these municipalities on a quarterly basis in here in order to improve the auditing at the end of the year. So they're coming in much earlier than what they are used to come in the past. And then there was also a question raised by an honourable member about certain municipalities actually budgeting completely unrealistically for revenue because they don't have a good idea of what their property rates base is, which they haven't done valuations. And, you know, we have to say that that is a real problem. I'm going to hand over to Jugal and Kululi to add.
Okay, thank you. I'll firstly respond on the issue of the fuel levy. I think that currently 23%, which is fine, 23% of the general fuel levy funds accrue to your metros. And I think the issue around the sustainability of that was raised by my acting chair. But I think the issue that we want to raise is the complexities come in because the fuel levy itself has, or the sharing arrangement has the characteristics of both a grant and also an own revenue source. So that type of arrangement can cause problems because if it is a transfer, then if it is sold as an own revenue type instrument, then the fact is that the municipality doesn't have any control over it. So that element has a sense of a transfer. But then on the other hand, the proxy to distribute such funds are on fuel sales. Now, fuel sales flow with the economy. So if your fuel sales drop, likely your transfers are supposed to drop. So you see, so those two aspects can create the make the implementation of such a system ambiguous. So our concern is in addition to maybe sustainability, but the design of it. And I think from Treasury side, they have acknowledged some of the concerns and are currently in the process of looking to review how the system works. Then a few other questions. The issue of the fiscal gap that was measured, it was based on the Municipal Infrastructure Investment Framework model that is also co-run by DPSA. And those type of models also estimate costs based on such things like economic efficiency in your urban areas, and high cost of delivering services, be it operating and infrastructure in your rural areas. So those type of calculations do take all of those things in consideration. Unfortunately, and I agree that urbanization does impact on the fiscal gap. Unfortunately, it was a static analysis for 2009-10, so that dynamic couldn't be caught here, but it is true. Then on the issue of the honourable member raised an issue of the dynamics of revenue collection in rural areas. And just to say that our current submission has a comprehensive chapter on looking directly at the revenue potential in these rural areas that will be tabled on the 24th. And just to give a sense of what we found is that it's true that certain areas, the revenues are extremely constrained. And but we also found that where there is potential revenue, because of capacity constraints, these rural areas are not using that revenue. And one of the issues that we did find, which is not directly touched on in this presentation or in this research, was the issue of traditional leaders and the complexities there are in collecting revenues in these areas. And we did find a correlation between such impacts on the revenue potential. And I believe even the review or the current equitable share does consider that to a certain extent.
To that, because that's one question that I forgot to raise, to respond to. That's the traditional leaders. And, you know, we when we did our first round of public hearings, we did not actually include traditional leaders. But we then interacted with the Portfolio Committee on Select Committee on Cooperative Governance, and they raised now the issue of the traditional leaders. So we made a very concerted attempt. I met with the chairperson, and then I also met with the CEO of the, and we had agreed, they had agreed that they were going to make a submission and respond on behalf of traditional leaders what the key issues around these things are. Unfortunately, that that never happened from their side. They came, one person came to attend the hearing, and then that was it. So we never got any feedback from them. So unfortunately, we didn't even capture what their own perceptions of the nature of the problem actually is. So it does not actually include those, because we could not get them to submit, to make a submission to us.
Oh, use desktop analysis. Okay, then my last comment will be on the surcharge. What we're proposing here are the surcharge on electricity in Eskom areas. What we're proposing here is a potential, not new revenue source, but a revenue source that's untapped. Because if you look at the Constitution 229, they say that a municipality is allowed to apply a surcharge on services that it's constitutionally mandated for, which would include then electricity as per the Constitution. But in certain areas, you have Eskom that provides these things, and we need to acknowledge that most of these areas are your rural, poor areas, but it's also areas where there's a potential to apply a surcharge on the Eskom tariff that's been charged for the provision of electricity. So it's not so much related, it has no financial impact on Eskom. It's just a potential, or there is possibly a legal potential for a surcharge to be applied on the tariff that's applied on these areas.
I think let me respond to two issues. Most of them have been tackled. The issue of capacity, I think, it's a really thorny issue, but we have always looked at capacity in municipalities. I think the issue which was raised is that we must take that further and look at especially governments which are intervening to support municipalities. Also, they have capacity challenges. And the issue which was raised that under Section 139, we find government departments are not well designed to intervene in that particular. Some of them are not well designed to intervene. We agree with the HOD that some of them are not well designed to do that. We need to look at the capacity of these particular government departments instead of simply looking at municipality only. It's a two-way thing. Then the other issue is, which Jugale has just pointed out now, revenue decline. I think as FFC would be the first one to admit that the graph which I put there about grants going up and phone revenues declining, we're not saying that grants are causing phone revenues to decline. We must be clear on that. There are a host of other factors which are actually contributing to the decline in
own revenues, issues of poverty, issues of unemployment, increase in indigence, etc., etc. So those are the issues which contribute to that particular issue. And lastly, something which is closer to my heart, I've been doing some research on the issue which Bongani pointed out, the issue of incentives. I think the only issue I can point out about the 60% which we had there, the discount, I think the issue is if incentives are badly designed, they can have perverse effects. They can be very, very harmful. We need to look at the design of these particular incentives. We need to look at the indicators within these particular incentives. So the design part must be very good so that we guard against these perverse effects of those particular incentives. I think those are the issues I can.
Thank you, Honorable Joseph. You have a follow-up.
So, thank you, Honorable Chair. I think the point I want to raise with our oversight visits, in particular those departments placed under administration, that we went to Polokwane last month. But I picked up there, and I think not sure what your role can be, but of concern to me was the department, the Treasury itself was under administration. That should lead other departments. It's like, the general department is not functional, cannot order the other departments. So my request to them would be that they need to really focus on the Treasury departments in the provinces too. If they are strong, they're able to guide and guard what is happening in the other departments on the financial management side. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members, for your input. Yes, you can if you have a response.
Let's say that the issue of the administration in Limpopo, which also includes the provincial treasurer, in terms of the PFMA, the responsibility is now the national treasurer's responsibility. We have also been part of the of that process, and we did make a submission on in August. I think we made our submission last year in terms of what we think must actually happen, because it's a number of treasuries actually that I have actually noticed over the past few that in terms of their capacity, you can actually start asking questions. Even as we speak now, you can start asking questions about whether this treasury has the capacity to actually do 1, 2, 3 things. I'm just putting that as a parting. There's work that we have actually done, like I said, that will try to assist in trying to pick up on some of these things. And there are some, looking at the indicators that we have developed, there are some provincial treasuries that even as we speak, we must actually start thinking about addressing some of those things.
Thank you very much, Malo. I think Honourable Members that our time is up, but I think we'll continue to engage further with the document and come to its final processing. And we have also, in as part of the recommendations in our conclusion of the Division of Revenue, recommended that the National Treasury should actually lead a process of making sure that there are workshops around this new equitable formula in provinces, so that we all have a common understanding on the formula itself and what is expected out of each and every municipality, to avoid the previous situation where a number of us could not understand the formula and the expectations out of that. So we'll then, because that report has been tabled with Parliament, I'm sure it's already been communicated with the Minister, and it will be for us to follow up, and including making sure that SALGA is also on board, and we will then continue to interact until we achieve what is intended. So thank you very much for your inputs. They were all valuable, and we appreciate the work that the FSP is doing
and we hope to continue engaging with one another on these matters. And in the absence of any comments from members, then, honourable members, this meeting is adjourned, and I thank you.